Worked our way past Labor Day. I was up in Manitoba for the weekend. Went through Minot, North Dakota, crossed the border at Antler. Canadian border crossing was amazing. All they wanted to do was talk hockey.
On which side?
Both, actually.
Oh, good.
The American crossing. He said, "I've been to Vegas a bunch of times. I love watching games in that rink."
Are they 100% hockey subscribers?
I was wearing my hat.
Oh, good.
He said, 100%. Be good.
Just remember, every time somebody you're talking to says 100%, just you have to put that little boom hockey in there.
Okay, so I was in Brandon, but I wanted to. We have a biggest fan. You don't know. Well, you may know this person, Jane Kay, longtime photographer for covers games.
Okay.
On television, you've worked with her for sure over the years. Based out of Winnipeg, yeah.
Okay.
Jane, her husband Warren Kay was an ENG for CBC Winnipeg, but apparently Jane listens to this podcast every time that there's a release. She takes the goes for a walk and listens to us, and just wanted to give Jane a big shout out.
We might have to get
out that we might have St. Francis, Manitoba. Yes, Jane would love it.
Okay,
and I didn't tell her we were going to give this shout out. I just want her to hear it organically. So, Jane, we love you. We'll get you a hat.
But okay, so you were driving around southern Manitoba.
Yeah, wet, very wet.
Yeah. What about the tree?
Did not get on that side of the of Brandon. Did not get to the halfway tree. I went Minot to Reston to Brandon, Manitoba.
And not to the halfway tree.
Did not get anywhere close to the halfway tree.
So I don't think it exists. I think you're lying. Passed it. I have passed the halfway tree, so I know it exists. But
people send me pictures all the time now because of this podcast. There's the tree. There's the tree. Ray Ferraro has passed that tree because he played in Brandon back in the day and had to fly to Winnipeg. He's going to join us today. A lot of things happening in and around the league, and he's not shy about his opinion. But the cool thing is we got another Ferraro joining full-time broadcasting in the National Hockey League this year, and he will be going past the halfway tree in Landon.
And I'll tell you what, Landon, who has worked on our other podcast, 100% Canucks, did a marvelous job, is moving in to do TSN's work on the Winnipeg Jets because Kevin Sawyer has moved to Calgary to do Flames regional broadcast. So the musical chairs in hockey television continue, and we'll have to see what goes on with the rest of the signings in hockey. I see our friend McLean has signed a new contract. Chris Cuthbert has signed a new contract. Craig Simpson has signed a new contract.
So those are official? I'd heard that they were in the works. I didn't know they were done.
They're done.
What about Friedman? What's going on with him or Bieksa?
Don't worry about it. They'll be okay.
Okay. Is that just posturing or is it legitimate that it's up in the air?
I don't know if it's posturing.
Seems odd that both of them would be.
Their contracts both were up, and so it and the landscape of television in Canada is shifting a little bit with the change without the CBC involved. So Rogers has to take more responsibility, and signing these guys to contracts is important.
Want to start the new agreement, is it? With those guys not signed.
Most important. Listen, be ready on the September 30th broadcast. Be ready. Be ready. That's all I'm going to say. And you know as well as I do, Rogers will be ready with those guys in place on September 30th.
Isn't it the 29th? Happen. Don't they have opening night?
I think opening night might be. I thought they were on the 30th. I thought the 29th was the American side. I could be wrong.
But I just thought they would have opening night.
Well, it might be a plug and play for them, right? If it's a TNT game or
back when I was there, we always had opening night. So obviously, things have slipped since I left.
When you were a kid back in the old days, when you were there on television, mister?
My first night on the national broadcast, on the national show,
yeah.
Wednesday Night Hockey, we opened the league. Austin Matthews, 4 goals in his league debut.
Against Ottawa. Yeah.
That was my first night. We had that game. We weren't giving that one up. And I don't know what's going on now, but Maybe you can talk to somebody.
Just keep talking. This is good. I like this. you've filled yourself with Manitoba wisdom. That's what you've done.
I don't think they're phoning to hire me back.
You don't think, huh? You got too many jobs already.
Yeah. I don't have room for that.
You don't have another job.
I may be able to squeeze one or two little responsibilities in, but
between you know, the Vegas Golden Knights broadcast, between your radio show and this podcast, you're a little busy. And then you do the In Goal podcast.
In Goal with Woody?
Yeah.
Kevin Woodley, one of our great contributors. You know that guy, Kevin Woodley? He didn't grow up playing hockey or playing goal.
Neither did I.
He was self-taught because he wanted to learn about the position so he could write about it. It's pretty cool. Good for him. In his 30s.
Wow. Good for him.
That is a cool story, Kevin Woodley. But Ray Ferraro is coming up in just a little bit. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the man that scored more than 400 goals in his National Hockey League career. 108, though, 1 year in junior. 108 in a single season.
What, the Tudor Shooter is a goalie on the other side?
Tudor Shooter?
Yeah.
But you know what? Every now and then, I'll be practicing.
That's what they were called. They were called Tudor Shooters.
Shooter Tooters. Oh. But that'll be at the other end. And the guys will miss the net on the Shooter Tooter, but will score on me. That bugs me every now and then. Every now and then, I get into that rut.
Nothing worse than losing to a piece of plastic.
Exactly. It's like, that guy's, damn it. Ray Ferraro coming up next on 100% Hockey. Hi, Jane.
Face Off Inside the NHL returns, taking you deeper behind the scenes than ever before. See it all from the star-studded Four Nations Face Off tournament.
Us against the world, boys.
To the adrenaline of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I'm scared of you guys.
With candid interviews and backstage access, experience the sacrifice, the rivalries, and the determination that define NHL greatness.
Just when I thought last year couldn't be topped, here we are.
A new season of Face Off Inside the NHL. Watch now only on Prime Video.
I was talking with John just a little bit and said I was back home this weekend. And I always love driving by the Keystone Center, Ray. Here's Ray Ferraro from ESPN. And obviously, Vancouver Canucks does a bunch of it. Where are you working this year?
I got 2 years left on my ESPN deal, which is to the end of their 7-year deal. We'll see what happens in the next year. And then I'm going to do roughly 25 Canucks games as well.
You doing any Kings games? Because you did Kings games last year.
No, I'm not going to do any more. After a while, you're like, okay, they too many balls in the air, man. Yeah. I'm lucky that I was able to do some, but I'll do about 80 games this year.
So I was driving by the Keystone, and I thought, geez, and you popped in my head because I knew we were going to be talking. And I thought to myself, that you scored 108 goals. You're one of the top 50 players of all time in major junior hockey. You scored 108 goals, and you had that move. And I've never talked to you about this, that breakaway move where you go down and you'd stop right in front of the goalie and then tap it in the net. Where'd you come up with that?
Well, I think it makes sense is that, you know, I'm trying to go as fast as I can. So the goalie's going to try and time his retreat into the net on my speed. And he's not going to know when I'm going to stop. So he'll be deeper in the net. I'll stop, and then generally I would shoot it low blocker because he wouldn't have time to react. And I think the last time I tried it, Dave Manson buried me from behind. And I just thought there's probably a different way to go about a breakaway. In junior, I'm telling you, Dave Manson and Ken Baumgartner were up in Prince Albert where they were terrifying. And If we had a power play, if we could just get someone to stand in front of the net, it was a victory. Like nobody wanted to go in there. Those guys, they were terrifying.
Okay, so but in an NHL shootout, would your move be legal?
Probably not. The progress
of the puck would stop, right?
Well, if I was a good enough stopper.
You beat me to it because the second part of that was when you said you were going in as fast as you can, speed is relative, right?
It is. I was far enough ahead that nobody could catch me, but it wasn't really that fast. But I don't, you know what? I bet you it would not be. Because the puck has to, and the player supposedly has to continue forward progress.
And we'll get Colin Campbell on. We'll ask him one day. So
you ever try that on Hexy in practice?
No chance. He would just cut your ankles out if you did that. I would not do that. No, just go with, if I ever got a breakaway on Hex, I just flip it up. It was just not worth the hassle. It was,
you know, anybody under the age of 20 who's listening to the podcast, and there's probably about four of them, you know, will think that all you did was play with violent guys.
No, I'm telling you, like, honestly, of course the game was different. And I think that year in Prince Albert, I want to say both Baumgartner and Manson had really close to 300 penalty minutes each. Like, the game was far different. Hexy, that year, he had 12 or 14 assists or something. He had 100 penalty minutes. Like, he,
as a goalie,
he was so tough. If you scored in practice, and of course, you know, everybody chirps the goalie chirps the shooters. And when you'd skate into the corner, you got to be heads up there in case Hex decided to zip one over at you. And so you had to be sharp. I mean, it doesn't happen anymore. It was a different world.
Okay. So sure. Manson had 247.
Okay.
Baumgartner, 72.
Oh yeah.
Baumgartner had 252 and 60.
On the same team.
And they just a minute here. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys over 100.
Right. And one of them was this guy. I'm sure he had to be over 100, was Al Stewart.
I loved his music.
No, that's a different Stewart. Was Al there? Was Al on that team?
No. I'll find him on the other team.
He was just this powerful winger that I think he had a whole bunch of shorthanded goals, and PA was good and big and tough. And you'd go in there and it would just, it was not a fun bus trip up there. Funny, the bus trip got quieter as we went north up there, you know, like nobody was too excited.
The third year that they played together, Manson only had 177. It was just he was in for,
because nobody would go near him.
Well, but Baumgartner had 277. So there you go. I still remember Baumgartner playing in L.A. of all the places. Yeah. And we, for some reason, one of the networks I was working with, we had a mic on him. And there's a scrum just inside the blue line, and there's got to be 12 guys in the scrum. I mean, seriously, it was just and is on a line change. The next thing you know, all we hear is, "Hey boys, daddy's home."
Ken, I believe, became
a lawyer.
Yeah. And I asked Al Arbor once, because Kenny was a defenseman and I played with him on the Islanders. I said, "Why did you move him to forward?" And Al said, "When you got a guy like that, you move him as far away from your goalie as possible." And I was like, "Okay, I got it." But he was a nice guy to have on your team, that's for sure.
We're sneaking up on the start of rookie camps, rookie tournaments this weekend, so we're getting close. Some things happening. But first of all, what was your reaction to a $20 million player when it came out?
Oh, good for him. Good for him. I mean, like, same thing what I thought, like, when Macklin Celebrini signed.
Yeah.
You know, like, the...
Do they get to 18 and 8 and 20 without the Leo Carlson offer sheet?
Not this quick, I don't think. I think the, you know, that's probably we'll look at as a little bit of a turning marker in the way salaries are doled out. I think what's really important to remember is the players get 50% of the hockey-related revenue. So the numbers don't especially matter, except it's 50%. Mm-hmm. Now, how that gets doled out is going to be top-heavy, of course. It really always has been. But as the revenues go, the players are going to get 50% of this revenue. And it seems to me that the numbers don't... they don't impact the general view as much as they used to. Like, people used to be more shocked at a big number than they are now. And now I think people look at it and go, I can't really relate to it. And it is what it is. But 20 million bucks is, of course, it's a hell of a lot of money. And he's the best defenseman in the game. And the timing of it was really great for him. Like, his contract coming up at the right time. Like, there's going to be some numbers that don't look right because of the timing of when the guy signed.
Yeah.
Had they signed a year ago? Well, we saw it. We saw a guy signed a year ago for $8 million. And had they been this summer, it would have been 12 or 13. And that's just the way
Vegas,
it goes.
Mitch Marner and Jack Eichel look like total bargains now.
Right. Fast.
Yeah.
Fast. Right. So there is, I always remember, you know, and I told this before, but when Bob Goodenow took over as the Players Association chief, the late Bob Goodenow, he told us in his first meeting, and I was playing in Hartford, and he said, look, guys, we need to disclose salaries. We do not have any knowledge of what anybody else makes, and that hurts and puts a lid on things. And he said, I'll tell you what's going to happen. Two things. If we decide to disclose, fans are going to be angry with the money because it will seem like a lot. And the owners are going to tell you it's the wrong thing. And as soon as those two things happen, the third thing will happen, and that is salaries will rise. Mm-hmm. And he was right all three times. Almost immediately, the owners told us, you guys are making a mistake. This, you should never disclose salaries. It should be a personal thing. Well, salaries disclosed. It took time, but players started to make, you know, much more significant money. I do have to tell you, Eric Brewer, who is funny, sarcastic, you know, ex-NHLer, 1,000 games. Every time somebody signs one of these wild contracts, like for our age, wild, he sends me a text. And he says something to the effect of, could you imagine what you would make in today's game? He does it every time. When Ville Koivunen signed in Pittsburgh for $32 million, he's got two NHL goals. Now, this is clearly a bet for the future for the Penguins. Brewer texts me right away. I mean, I don't think Koivunen's ink was dry on the paper yet. And Brew got on me about, geez, could you imagine? It's like,
would have been a nice problem. Every time?
No, I laugh now. Hell, I scored 40 goals, and I went from 125 grand to 200 grand. And that was 1980, I think 88, something like that. But I went from 125 to 200 grand.
Do you know your career earnings?
No. Not enough.
No.
Because if it was more, I wouldn't be talking to you two dingle balls, you know?
I can tell you right now, I mean, I'm old enough that I used to be able to compare salaries head-to-head with almost every guy on the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers who I was producing on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Your salary to their salary?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My salary was wrong.
Why were you overpaid?
Hey, why are you talking to us if you made that much money?
That was one of the great things that, you know, the equality of salaries in the 80s was the players were so badly underpaid.
And a lot of that was that we literally did not have any idea what anybody else was making.
Right. Well, don't you remember the hockey news? When the hockey news would come out with that center page pullout, here's what all the players are making.
And so, but the GMs would tell us, oh, you know, I can't pay you that because I'm playing this player. He's our top salary and we're paying him this. And then you find out it was all a crock anyway.
Right. Yeah.
But we just were happy to go along at that time.
You loved the game enough.
Yeah,
play the game.
I would have loved it. We would have loved it just the same if you were getting paid multiples of what we were doing. That's for sure.
400 goals and 14 million career earnings, according to Google.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's underpaid now. like dramatically. Yeah,
there were, you know, from there to here, there were some speed bumps along the way. So yeah. Probably sounds better than it is.
So what do you think happens with Gauthier and the like, some of these guys? Like, how hard do you want to play ball here?
Well, if you're who, Gauthier or Anaheim?
If you're Gauthier.
Well, I mean, there's no rush for Gauthier. Eventually, you're going to have to sign. Mm-hmm. I think you're probably... I mean, the metrics of everything have changed, but my suspicion is that it'll be a shorter deal. Unless they're going to get into those really big numbers, why would he sign a longer deal?
Yeah.
Well, and it goes back to your point about Makar, about timing. Yeah. Yeah. We know the cap is going up. We know it's going to go up. You know, we're going to be in 2 years, we're going to be close to $130 million. And so why not be a free agent and get a bigger number then, knowing full well you can negotiate a solid 2-year deal now?
And, of course, Pat Verbeek is working backwards off of the same metric.
Sure. Right.
And, you know, I guess you call it a misstep. But the other side, you know, the Carlson side wasn't going to sign. You know, it's not like they're blindly walking into this thing either. And when you don't get Carlson signed at a lower number, that opens up Gauthier. It costs them more for Minchikov. Like, Verbeek's still got to put that team together in a rising world. Like, mm-hmm. What do you think? What do you do with Bennett Senekin? Like, what if that kid knocks it out of the park again?
That's next summer's problem. That's next summer's problem.
But you can, you know, the old term, kick the can down the road. Right now, the can's got a big rock in it. You can only kick it 5 feet down the road. Yeah. Like, they've got some significant decisions.
And your toe's getting sore.
Yeah, because it doesn't go far enough.
Yeah.
And so they've got some significant players to try and tie up. You know, like, that's, and if you look at Anaheim last year, that was such an exciting step for them. And a lot of their excitement was the amount of goals they scored, was their forwards. Eventually, you need to balance your roster out. And you run into, if you're in the $15 to $18 million range with players, that $100 million cap or $120 million cap gets chewed up pretty good. Like, they got Lacombe signed. That mm-hmm. kid's a hell of a player, but you need more than one. And we'll see how they piece it all together.
But the evolution happens fast. Like, mm-hmm. they were the mm-hmm. feel-good story of the year, and now they might be forced to take a step back.
Right, and that's where, like, San Jose, you know, they get Celebrini done. I guess the road to building now has to be shorter, because Celebrini is a great example. Now, Macklin's, you know, clearly one of the better players in the league, but your young talent is going to get to a bigger number faster. And so you don't have the long rebuild time, mm-hmm. because as you're rebuilding, those younger kids are pushing into some pretty, pretty hefty dollars. And they might not be able to give you the production commiserate with the dollar. And that's going to be another pothole that the managers are going to have to step around.
I just looked up the, you know, we've talked about Seneca and Carlson and Gauthier. I just looked up the Ducks defense. You know, there's not much veteran experience on that blue line right now.
Right.
When Nick Jensen looks like he's going to be relied on a lot if he stays healthy. That's a fascinating thing to put Joel Quenneville behind a bench and say, we're going to run with the kids on the blue line.
Right. I guess some of it is, this is what you've got.
Right. No, exactly. Right? Yeah.
You know, and you have to hope that a couple of those younger guys hit and maybe hit in a way that they're not quite ready to do so. Like, that's a hard way to build a team. Like, look what San Jose's doing, right? I use them because San Jose and Anaheim felt very similar last year.
Yep.
And, you know, they explode onto the scene. I would put Utah in that same grouping, that they're young and what's the next step or two look like for them. And so San Jose goes and they're like, we got to plug some holes on the blue line. We need to bring in some older players. You know, they bring in Nurse and they bring in Trouba. And so that gives them size and physicality. They're not going to move the puck very well, but you know, like you can't get everything. And so you have to try and, did we plug this hole well enough to overlook that hole? That's where, like, what Caroline has done, I think, was really impressive. They have identified a way to play and a player that fits better in Carolina than fits in other places.
Like, is that analytics that tells you that, or is that your eye test?
Oh, I think you identify a style that you want to play. Mm-hmm. The analytics helps you identify the player that will fit best in that style. Like I look, so last year, I'm trying to think, there's Martinuk, Robinson, Carrier. If you didn't know what they looked like physically looked like, and you just moved their jerseys around, you would go, oh, another big, fast, left-handed forward.
Yeah.
Like they identify guys that fit, and I think those guys fit better in Carolina than they might somewhere else. And so I believe that's has been one of their great managerial strengths.
Managerial or coaching?
Well, I think Rod identifies a style that fits best. Pulski and his staff finds the players that fit best in the system, but also in the money they want to allocate to those players. Mm-hmm. And so the metric is just, it's completely different. And I would say it was pretty obvious the best team won last year. The best team. I don't say they got the best players, but they built a team. Like that, they were fast and physical and determined, and they lose a goalie, they put another goalie in.
Yeah. Like they were so efficient early on that they never wore down, right?
Nobody wore down. They just, you know, and then you're going to have in each player is going to have high points in the season, right? And some are high points are larger and longer, but they got to the playoffs, and for 2 months, how many guys were more effective than Jordan Staal? They just weren't. And then you look at, Aho didn't have a great production plan. Well, he didn't need to. I mean, he was trying to score more. Aho, Svechnikov, Jarvis played hurt and now has, you know, had shoulder surgery. But they just, whatever they needed, somebody was able to provide it. And that to me is the definition of a championship team.
It's a copycat league, but nobody's going to try and copy playing $10 million shy of the cap.
Well, and not only that, I just don't think, you know, I think lots of us give Brendan Moore lots of credit. I still don't think he gets enough. I don't think he gets enough for the style of play that they play. Because there are, I mean, I was guilty of it a couple of times, thinking that if they're going to play this way for 82 games, there's no way they can do it for another 22 right. games.
They'd be worn down.
And and they defied that this time because of their depth, right?
Well, one thing that, you know, I'm a huge, I think like most people are, Brendan Moore fan. I'm going to tell you one quick story in a second about him, about his intensity. But if you look at the way they play, no forward plays 22 minutes. Like they play four lines a lot of the time. Their minutes stay in a manageable field. Their pace is just remarkable. The intensity comes from Rod. They score in the empty net in game six in Vegas. I'm 5 feet from the bench. And so I just look over because I want to see what the players are jumping around, right? They've won the cup. It's over. They're jumping around. Rod's behind the bench and he's going up and down the bench yelling, one more minute. I wanted to say to him, Rod, you got a 3-goal lead. Yeah. You don't need to play the last minute. Like, take a breath. But his intensity, it just oozes out of every pore. that's the way he played. I get the feeling if I can't imagine he plays golf, but that would be the way that he would play golf. I don't like everything he does is at the max of what he can give. No. And he expects that from his players. As to the copycat league, I mean, that phrase has been around for some time. I think it's the most ridiculous thing for teams to do, because I could go find a centerman that looks like Jordan Staal. He's 6'4", he's 215 pounds. He's a good face-off guy, but he's not Jordan Staal. He doesn't have the same heart. He doesn't have the same makeup. He doesn't have the same character. I can try and build a team that looks like the, I don't know, whoever, like Vegas when they won the cup.
Yeah, but they're with not that defense. The same. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're not the same people. You can, it's not AI. You can't build the same thing. You can build a facsimile, something that looks the same, but it's not the same. And so I think in general, you could look and go, oh, gee, that's how they did it. I like a lot of their ideas. But you don't get to start with their players. You start with your players. How about look at your players and go, how do I make my team, my group of players, the best that they can be? What do I need to fill in around my core? Carolina did it, but Carolina's way is not going to be the way Pittsburgh does it or Edmonton does it or Toronto does it. It can't be. They're not the same guys. And if they try to do it, they're going to lose.
You know, it's funny because I think the guy that is emblematic more of that than any other player on the Hurricanes, you said Jordan Staal, might be Taylor Hall.
Yeah, right.
When you think about how many times we all thought that Taylor Hall was on the scrap heap.
Yep.
And he was done. And he was miserable. And it showed on the ice. All of a sudden, he's been reborn. And he's talking about he was born to be a Hurricane. And look at the playoffs he had. And you know, and he and Stankoven and Blake were as good a line as there was through all four rounds.
Now, I one of my worries or concerns, I mean, doesn't matter to me who wins, but was that I thought Carolina's top six might be too small. You know, Aho's not very big. Blake and Stankoven are not very big. But in this theme of copycat, the small player can be very effective if they have heart and courage. There are lots of players that you'll see that are small that will be more of regular season producers than they can be in the playoffs. Another one I did in the playoffs, I just think the kid is fantastic, is Zach Benson. Mm-hmm. We had the Buffalo series a couple of times. And I mean, he looks to me to be every bit the type of player of Brad Marchand. Yeah. In that he's a pain in the ass, but if you focus too much on that, you overlook his skill. Like, this is a skilled little guy. And I guess Blake and Stankoven, I view them the same in Benson in the same sort of way. They're just short. They're not small. There's a difference. Short and small are two different things.
Pause, and we'll come back with Ray Ferraro on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. I got a question for him that is multiple choice, but curious which way he's going to go. Stay with us.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen.
And he scores!
Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
Ken, I'm going to give you three general managers and their positions. Not which one you wouldn't want, but which position would you lean into? Cheveldayoff, Waddell, and Verbeek. Which job, if you had to take one, which one would you take? Because they're all in tough spots right now.
Yeah. Probably Verbeek. Mm-hmm. Because I
better
think,
better golf courses?
Well, there is that. I would think because you've got more of the high end youth that's ready to be at the high end. I would worry about if it were Don Waddell, you know, you got to get Fantilli signed. You've got this thing around Werenski that, you know, has been put to bed for now, but you know, that would be a concern. I mean, the guy's a franchise changer, and then you get to Winnipeg and clearly you're going to have to settle the Hellebuyck trade request at some point. And you've got to kind of retool or rebuild or whatever, like on the fly. I don't know if they've got enough high end that's ready to replace what they've lost over the last couple of years. So I would say Anaheim. Just because of the youth feels like it's going to be enough to carry their team, but also be enough to produce quicker than some of the other places.
The Winnipeg scenario is rather fascinating when you think that, you know, Kevin has done a really good job in previous opportunities, yeah. The best being the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade, where he ended up getting two really good players that are still helping the hockey club. Mm-hmm. But this Connor Hellebuyck thing, when Hellebuck's agent comes out and issues a statement, it's really put the Jets on their heels in so many ways. And yet camp's not that far away. And I would presume Hellebuck's going to show up.
Well, the statement to me is irrelevant. I mean, didn't you know
But it wasn't. It made it public. And so all the rumors and innuendo that we all knew and we all thought, you know, now
it's a tactic. It was
sure,
a tactic.
Sure, right? It is. Yeah. It's absolutely a tactic.
But the statement notwithstanding, people were still going to talk about it anyway. It's not like it was just going to, you know, fade away and nobody was going to mention it again. I don't think it put any more pressure or immediacy to him. He can't give him away. He's got to still try and get the best deal that he possibly can. I've thought all along that, like many people, I guess, that Buffalo makes the most sense. But I'm reading some of these things. Oh, he's got to get four pieces and five pieces. Like, that's not going to happen. Like, why wouldn't you focus on trying and get a couple of more impactful pieces? I'm a proponent, I guess, of more but quality than something that makes it sound good. Oh, we got five collective pieces for, and four of them are never going to play. Like,
you need a goalie in return?
Probably. Well, if it's Buffalo, Buffalo's got about eight of them, so they're you know, like, you'd think that they'd want to send you one back.
If I could get a quality goaltender and a second line center, I'd do the trade tomorrow.
I would too. And Buffalo, like in the playoffs last year, was very evident. You know, they've got a couple of young guys that are really good. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be part of the deal, but might make some of the other young guys more
expendable.
Expendable, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Like Helenius came into the playoffs and was terrific. Looks like a little Claude Giroux to me. You know, he's little, right-handed, feisty. That kid can play. I mentioned Benson earlier. But they also have a guy, Yuri Kulich, that missed most of the season. He had blood clots, unfortunately. He was skating at the end of the year, but wasn't ready to play. Like, that's a guy that's going to force his way into that lineup. You can only have so many guys in the lineup. So maybe there is a deal that someone further down the Buffalo chain becomes available that becomes a second line center-ish type player. But I'm with you, John. I mean, like, if you can put those pieces together in that, like a goalie and a second line center, you might not do better than that.
No. Well, and I mean, I've been doing Winnipeg Jets stuff now for 6 or 7 years, and all you've heard about is second line center, second line center, second line center.
Well, but okay, so Kenny Holland, who is a good friend, so I'll preface that, but he's got, you know, he's got some great lines. And one of them is, there is no hockey player store. When you're short a quart of milk, you go buy a quart of milk. When you're short, in this case, a second line center, you can't go to the store and buy one. So I need a second line center. Hey, John, will you give me yours? Beat it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're hard to find. And when you get them and you have, and they're gone for one reason or another, you just, you can't get it. They have a second line center. I just don't know if he's, I don't think he's there at this moment, but I'm telling you that, that Viggo Bjork, they're going to love him in Winnipeg. That kid is, he's another guy. He's short, not small. He's got a big personality. I mean, in the game, he's going to have, he will have an impact very quickly in Winnipeg. Now, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's going to be in October, but they're going to love that kid in Winnipeg.
As a teammate, I'm curious if, and I don't know whether they'd report or not, but if they do, what's the room like around Winnipeg or Detroit with the Larkin situation, knowing that these two high-profile players have asked to be traded if the trades don't happen and they're part of your team?
Again, I'm not in the room, but I'm just going to say my view would be Hellebuck's would be less contentious. And you'd be surprised. The guys don't talk about it once you get in there. You're like, whatever's happening's happening. Everybody's looking for the scoop. The player themselves, they're not giving you anything, probably because they don't know anything. But nobody's really talking about it.
So it's not as big a distraction as everybody thinks.
No, but the Larkin one feels like it would be more to me.
Because he's the captain?
Yes, the captain. And I mean, all goalies, you'll hate this, but Larkin's part of the team. Hellebuck is in his own world and island, and he's going to stop the puck or not. And of course, he's going to stop everything he can, and probably a whole bunch that he doesn't, or that she shouldn't stop, because he's very good. Larkin's in the middle of the mix of everything. And I think there's a difference. And it felt like when he dropped that, that felt seismic. And this felt, the Hellebuck one felt more, not expected, but I could see that. That's what it felt like to me.
Well, Darren mentioned Detroit as a team. Do we have any clue of what the Red Wings are going to be when, I don't want to say they're rudderless, but there's no guy off the ice that seems to be in charge right now, and other than Stevie, who they've told they don't want in charge.
It is preposterous to be at this time of the year without a general manager. I read something today and I've never even thought about it. Okay, you're Simon Edvinson. You're a restricted free agent. What do you do? You got nobody to talk to. You can't even negotiate a contract because who's in charge of that?
But there has to be somebody within the organization doing that still. There has to be.
Yeah, but what's their outlook with the next guy?
Yeah, so I'm the cap guy, and I think Edvinson's worth six times whatever, and the new GM comes in and says, hey, Ray, what the hell were you doing?
But he wasn't there yet. I mean, the new GM's not there yet.
You can't hamstring a guy at this point. So the Tigers GM pulled his hat out of the ring today, or yesterday, whatever it was. And I just find it astounding that when, they told Steve that, they told Yzerman, it's time, we're going in a different direction, that they weren't at least running on the track at that point. Like that to me is, like, Vancouver took forever to go through their process. It was April and May. Mm-hmm. That's the time to do it. Not now.
I've been reading a heck of a lot more criticism of Chris Illich than I have of Steve Yzerman right now, to be honest. I mean, and here, this is an ownership. This is a family that has dedicated so much to the Red Wings, so much to Detroit sports, so much to downtown Detroit. Sure. And yet the people are just shitting on them. It's amazing.
Well, because they want decisiveness. They want leadership. Mm-hmm. They want to know who's running their team. Look, they haven't made the playoffs in, what is it now? How many? 10?
This is 10.
And they don't feel any closer than they were a couple of years ago. And so they're like, okay.
So it's dysfunctional now, right, from the outside looking in.
At this moment, it is.
Yeah.
Is there somebody, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but is there somebody out there that this job makes sense for? Or is there lots of guys?
Well, I mean, there's always lots of guys. I mean, I'll go back to the Canucks search. They talk to 30 people.
Yeah.
And some are more ready than others. My understanding is there were a couple of candidates that were really, really good. But can you go to a team now and talk to those guys?
Yeah.
Because that team is going to be without one of their assistant managers September the 10th or 15th. Like, what are they going to do? How are they going to fill that spot? And most of these guys have clauses that they could leave, right, for an upward position. But I don't even know what to tell you because there's guys I know their names that are really highly thought of, but they're just, I mean, I don't even know if the Red Wings are talking to them. Like, how, they haven't said anything. There hasn't been a list of four or five or six guys that are in that last grouping. And the only thing I read, or see, is what was reported today, and that's that the Tigers GM says, no, I'm going to stay and finish what I'm doing here. What a mess. Like, it really is a mess.
It does sound like they want an analytic based person.
Okay, but Darren, everybody is analytic based now. Like, who doesn't use analytics?
Oh, no, I agree with that. But there's more traditional hockey people that use analytics. And then Sonny Mehta or Eric Tulsky, or I would put them in that category. Okay.
Well, I think the days that...
Of the analytic based.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I think the days of the first criteria has to be X player, those are gone. Who the hell cares now? The game is more complicated. It's more detailed. I just want the best person, whomever that might be. And if, Jersey thinks it's Sonny Mehta, then it should be Sonny Mehta. Carolina won with Eric Tulsky. Great. Eric Tulsky put together a hell of a team.
Well, that's just the newest version of that copycat league that Darren was talking about.
Sure. Well, you don't want to get left behind. Oh, I got to. But you could hire an analytic guy. You could hire somebody that builds the most complicated model of player development, et cetera. And he doesn't have a clue, but he just built a great model.
Yeah.
What you need is somebody that can portray a vision and has a roadmap to try and get to the vision. And while they're doing that, they could do everything right and never win, because that's the way sports is.
Right. And by the way, we're sneaking up on rookie tournaments, and you don't have a general manager.
Yeah, who's going? I don't know.
I think
Sean Horton. Listen, Steve went to the Helenka Gretzky tournament in Edmonton. Yeah. He was one of the Red Wing guys there.
I think Sean Horkoff has got a pretty significant position at this point. He's one of their assistants, but. And so I assume they're doing it by committee.
Right.
By the way, rookie tournaments have come a long way. We started with Ken Baumgartner and Dave Manson. My first rookie games, I was with Hartford. We played Boston a couple of times. And first of all, it felt like it was just a bunch of guys I played against the year before. It was all a bunch of junior players.
Junior guys.
And by the midway point of the second period, it was a bloody boxing match. I couldn't even, I don't, one of the games I know we didn't finish, you know, but I, like, it was just so ridiculous. Like, let's go to the rookie games. Oh, great. And you show up and here are all the tough guys from the Ontario League and the Western League and the Quebec League and a bunch of 20 and 21 year olds. it was so bad.
As I said, there's that 20-year-old guy. All six of our listeners that are 20 years or younger are listening to you thinking, what sport is he talking about?
I'm talking about the Survival League. And when you were, yes, when you were 155 pounds, my goal out of those rookie games was to get to the end of them. Oh. Just get the hell out of there.
Okay, I got two things for you. One, 100 games or over, you only have to play two exhibition games. How excited would you be for that?
Oh, fantastic.
Like, how good is that?
Two exhibition games. I think I probably liked three or four, you know, like just to get in the game again. But
that's more than I thought you would say.
Well, but the guys now are so much more advanced by the time they get to camp. Mm-hmm. We were still using camp as a training time. And okay, they're long past that. The exhibition games serve very little to no purpose.
And Landon is in Winnipeg. Let's talk about Landon Ferrero.
Yeah, really happy for him. The Winnipeg job opened up, and he went and auditioned for it. And today he's probably close to the Alberta border right now. He's got his truck loaded up, and he's on the way. And his wife and little guy Luca will go in a couple of weeks, and he's excited. What a great opportunity for him to, you know, to start, and from Shane Knighty to Kevin Sawyer, and now Landon's got this chance. He's with Dan Robertson, who is excellent at what he does, and so he's going to learn, and he's excited and nervous and very grateful that the chance is there.
Did you give him any advice on the drive from Vancouver, from BC to Manitoba?
Oh, no, he's done this before. He had to come from Michigan, from Grand Rapids, year from Boston, all the way back.
So he's good.
He's good. He is, that drive, I'll tell you, when you go east to west and you get into the Dakotas, holy, you're like, how big is this state? It's forever.
Montana never ends.
Never. And you know
Montana
what?
Montana,
you know,
never ends.
You know what's nice about Montana, John? They space the cities out about 200 miles apart. Yeah. Billings, Butte, Bozeman, yeah. they all bees. And you're just like going stop to stop to stop. And yeah, that was it for me.
Yeah, you know what? I knew I was close to the end when I got to Missoula. So it was.
then you could feel the state sign is going to turn soon. Yeah, yeah. I know it.
I did it four times one way with my son who went to university in Vancouver, and a couple times going the other way with him. And I loved the drive. So, and I did it myself a couple of times looking for work. So by the time I got to Toronto, I had 48 pink slips. So it's all right.
Well, but just think of that though. When you're by yourself, every question you ask, you get the right answer, don't you? It's the best.
Well, I couldn't yell at the navigator.
No, there was none of that anymore. Not then.
You didn't have CarPlay, did you?
What? Nope. CarPlay? I was just praying that we got through the mountains and so there was at least one more AM radio station you could listen to.
I do remember, you know, having the big map, the Rand McNally map. But I couldn't read it. So I was not a navigator. I'd open that thing up. I couldn't even find where I was.
Right? No, like you are here.
Yeah, no, there was none of those. It was a miracle I made it from end to end.
Well, and then the good news is it's only to Winnipeg. Because on the Canadian side, the toughest part of the drive is from Lake of the Woods to Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah, you're not going to have to worry about that.
You don't have to worry about that. That's right.
Yeah, he's really excited though, and good. You know, he'll get there, and very shortly They're right into camp and the exhibition. And you mentioned the rookie games, and it all happens fast.
Yeah, well, I tell you I don't mind saying, he did a hell of a job for us on our 100% Canucks show, and we're going to miss him there.
Yeah, thank you. He really has learned a lot in the last couple of years. And you guys know, like we all think you can just go broadcast and then you start. And halfway through the first show, you're like, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain to people all of the background stuff that happens. And so, you know, like he's going to do games really full time for the first time. And he's going to learn about the communication of producer and tape room and him getting it onto the air. And I tell this story because in my first year, I was completely clueless. And so I asked for a highlight, but I don't really know that when I talk into my talk back, I think I'm just talking to the producer. I don't realize it's going through the whole truck. So I say to the producer, because the highlight that came up wasn't what I was looking for. And I'm like, hey, who came up with that highlight? Like, that's not right. You got to get it right. Not knowing that the tape guy is listening to me as well. And so as I got a note back after the game, stopped by. So I stopped by the truck, and I wouldn't say it was a scolding, but whatever's next door to scolding, it was a really good lesson for me.
An education.
Yes. And then having to walk through the tape room door and say, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm clueless. I had no idea what was going on. And so all of those things he's going to learn, like everybody that starts, they're going to learn. And your 10th game doesn't sound, thankfully, anything like your first game.
Yeah.
And you're going to think like you got it. And then the next week's totally different.
Yeah. So any analyst, any color man that works, I think if he has an opportunity to sit in a TV mobile for a couple of games to understand.
Are you kidding me? A couple games. I lasted one period.
No, I know, but
it's chaos.
John, yeah. I was there one period and I went, I will never come back in here during a broadcast again. So,
I'm with you.
Everything's so urgent. Oh,
come on, guys. It's easy.
No,
it's
overwhelming.
So here's the other thing. And I was actually thinking, out walking my dog this morning, thinking about this, about Landon. And you know, that for the longest time, Kevin Sawyer has lived in Winnipeg, particularly between the benches. Yeah. You love between the benches.
I do. Yeah.
I don't think Landon should start between the benches.
I don't know I don't think he has a choice. I think that's where he's starting.
But my recommendation would be is sit beside Dan for four or five games so that you get that innate communication with each other and you understand each other's rhythms.
You know what, John? That's a really good point. Like when I started, I guess it was 6 years ago, when I started with Sean McDonough, looking back, I probably should have stayed upstairs with Sean. And I think it would have helped both he and I about learning the cadence and when he's going to lay out.
Exactly. Or
I might have something to say. I could have tapped him on the arm.
Right.
Right. And when you're upstairs, downstairs, you're
out of the gate. Of the gate. And quite frankly, I mean, the one thing Landon should not feel out of the at the beginning is on an island by himself. And when you're down there, who's your support system even in the booth? You got nobody.
There's nobody. It's funny when you say things like it brings up. So I'm halfway through the second period of a game with TSN and all my power goes out. I've got no monitor, nothing. And so I say to the truck, to Chris Edwards, who's our producer, I'm like, hey, Eddie, I got nothing here. I can't see anything. There's no one to come and fix it, right? Because
you can't get there.
No, I'm between the benches. Yeah. And so he goes, okay. And this was, I mean, this is a credit to Eddie, was that he said, okay, you're just going to have to trust me on the highlights. And so he'd tell me the play and I'd have a general idea and he'd basically speak the highlight. Mm-hmm. And then I'd just kind of do analysis with a black screen because there was nothing there. And we got through the end of the period. So the A2 comes out and he's going to check and he jumps in the little spot there. I jump out because it's so small. I jump out, he jumps in. I'm standing on the visitor's bench and he looks at me. He was in there like 10 seconds. He looks at me, he grabs the extension cord.
No.
Plugs it back in. I had stepped on the extension cord and unplugged everything.
Okay, so in addition to that kind of thing, I just think that Landon, and this is just my personal opinion, I think Landon would get some chemistry with Dan, who I think is a brilliant broadcaster. Yeah. Get some chemistry with Dan before you send him out there on his own.
Yeah, maybe they will. I don't know. He hasn't mentioned it. I told him, look, we sound similar enough. Don't say anything stupid because I say enough stupid things and I don't need people thinking I'm doing your game.
Well, when I tweet out, boy, that Ray Ferraro is saying stupid stuff on that Winnipeg show.
Oh, don't worry. People will. They will. And he said, and he told me, he said, yeah, you do the same. And so I'm like, you betcha, son. I got it.
That's good. That's good.
You sound good, man.
We had a great summer. Actually, Cammy and I are headed to Chicago to see our son Riley tomorrow for a couple of days. Reese, our youngest man, he's in the 11th grade. We got three grandkids now, one on the way, and I feel great. I had a great summer, and outside of booking travel, I'm really looking forward to the start of the season. My first game's in Boston. September 29th, and I have 22 flights booked between September 28th and October 25th.
Wow.
What? And I'm like, oh yeah. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go. First month is busy, always is.
Well, that's even brazier than I ever expected it to be.
But you know what? I would say this. I started in May of 2002. Well, October of 2002. So this is, year 24. And every job has something that kind of is, nags at you a little bit. And for me, it's just the travel during the season. Yeah, but to be able to keep doing this, man, like, what a great gig. I love it. And look forward to getting back at it again.
You could have a real job.
Yes. Yes, I could. And given my grade 11 and a half, it would have been piling blocks at Corpac Cement Products. So I am very, very, very happy where I am.
I love doing this podcast, and you are one of my favorite people to get to talk to. We'll see you down the path here, okay?
You betcha. We'll talk soon, guys. And I hope you all had a great summer and best for the start of the 26-27 season, if you can believe that.
There's Landon's dad with us on 100% Hockey. Back with more after this.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to four games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
That take on Detroit is one of the best breakdowns I've heard in a summer of evaluating what's going on around the National Hockey League with some tough decisions being made.
Yeah, well, Ray's never been shy about having an opinion, which is important. I think that a lot of us looked at the timing of the Yzerman announcement and saying, what are you doing? I mean, editorially, a team is trying to rebuild itself or continue to rebuild, and you allow this situation to happen after the draft and after free agency. It made no sense then. And, without a general manager on, September the 8th,
You called it from the very start of the summer that it was going to take a while.
I was told by somebody it's going to take them into September. So that's all. I was just repeating what I was told. And it's one of those things that you're going, well, I can't.
It feels uncomfortable now, the way that Ray positioned it. Now it's like, wow, that's,
yeah.
You're trying to hire somebody. You're going to take somebody from somebody else in September. Here's
the other amazing thing with everything that's going on in the NHL and all the controversy that occurred in April, May, and June in the NHL, the two franchises that got a lot of discussion were Vancouver, and Ryan Johnson and the Sedin twins seem to have righted the ship there, and there's a lot of positivity in the market.
Zee Buoyum, that extension, yeah.
Right, and Zee Buoyum getting the new 8-year deal, and Toronto. And we spent almost an hour with Ray, and we really didn't talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I think everything's been said. Now you just got to see if it's going to work in Toronto. And people are torn. A lot of people came on board when they won the draft lottery and got Gavin McKenna. That soothed a lot of questions. And there's still a large segment that are, let's see how that's going to play out. There's not much more you can say. A lot was said about Toronto in a short period of time.
That's right. But had things not fallen into place the way they did between McKenna and Radish and Hiller and Bobrovsky, the noise would still be there all summer. And so what they did was, and John Chayka did this, is he really quelled all of the discussion. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, it's amazing to think that that the Maple Leafs, who are, going into another year, I think, outside of the playoff picture, in my opinion, seem to have been able to appease at least a few of their fans with what they've done. But
still a lot of questions there.
They haven't played an important game yet.
Can Bobrovsky regain the form that he had in the regular season? He's multi-Vezina Trophy winner, but at 40 years old. Is Radish able to live up to that contract?
Right.
What's Jim Hiller's impact? There's
you haven't even mentioned Austin Matthews, who, in my opinion, I mean, everything centers around whether Austin Matthews is going to play well, is going to play healthy. And that's the biggest part for this Maple Leaf squad.
We'll continue to break it down an inch closer to the start of rookie tournaments this weekend. We're in San Jose, so I'm looking forward to that. Closing the book on Labor Day weekend. It's getting close, man.
I think I'll still play some more golf.
Yeah, boy. How is your short game?
My short game? Non-existent. Yeah. I haven't played in a month, so.
You're still not hitting it off the tee well.
No, I hit it.
That's a comment about your short game. Yeah. You're not very far off the tee.
Yeah, you're spending too much time on the golf course.
I am. Talk to you next time. 100% Hockey with Millard Shannon.